This is James Fox, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
I'd like to thank Soundstripe for sponsoring this episode. When I first started the podcast, I cringe listening back and hearing the techno version of the X-Files music that I used to use. Yes, that actually did happen, but as a new podcaster, I didn't really know what I was doing. It's a lot to take in. How do I make sure I don't infringe on copyright? Where do I get good quality tracks? There are a lot of questions. That's why you should take some of the hassle out of your creating, whether it's podcasts, YouTube, TikTok, or Twitch streaming, and use Soundstripe. Soundstripe has a huge library of over 8,000 songs composed by Grammy award-winning artists. All the music is royalty-free, so you don't need to worry about copyright claims against your channel. There's a plan for everyone starting from only $9.99 a month. So, check out Soundstripe today. Use my special link zen.ai/UFOsound to access unlimited royalty-free music for your content, and be sure to use my promo code PODCAST at checkout to save 10% off any subscription plan. Hi everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and this is your long-awaited, long-overdue, delete-as-applicable review of Moment of Contact, director James Fox's latest piece. Joining me for this review is Dan. Welcome.
Howdy, howdy.
You've had a copy of this for a while, Dan, as have I, and we've sat on it. I've watched it again just this morning, and we've made some notes, and we're going to talk about Moment of Contact. It's been hyped up, not by necessarily James Fox, but others, about the event, the incident, and it's come into real prominence. We've got James Fox on the podcast on the 31st of October. It'll be released, but it'll be available over the weekend in the next couple of days, early access as well, once that's done, folks. So be sure to check that out. Thanks to everyone who's sent over questions as well. James is obviously doing the media rounds at the moment, so as always, do my best to make sure it's a little bit different to what you've heard elsewhere. Moment of Contact, his follow-up piece, kind of, to The Phenomenon, because there is going to be a The Phenomenon 2, so this isn't necessarily a sequel, but it's the next piece that's came out, is distributed by 1091 Pictures and James Fox's own CE3 Productions. It was released on the 18th of October on streaming platforms, including iTunes, Amazon, Vimeo, etc. The link will be in the description for the pod for you to pick that up as well. It's a genie.ios link with everything in there, so you can pick your platform. The production itself starts with a blurb on the screen, Dan. In January of 1996, North American Aerospace Defense Command, or NORAD, warns Brazilian authorities their radar has picked up UFO activity near Virginia, Brazil. And look for how many different ways we pronounce Virginia, trying not to say the wrong word as others have done.
Brazil.
Yeah, in Brazil. Now, this is an incident which apparently has almost everything you would look for in a UFO event. If you think of Roswell being the stereotypical UFO crash and what happened in the story and the myth and the lore, it's got the crash, it's got live beings being captured, dead beings, witness accounts, cover-ups, videos, pictures, US confiscation of materials and bodies, and now potentially, we'll get into later on, 26 years later, even more may be revealed as yet. So it's very much the modern day Roswell in almost every way, shape or form, just that the witnesses are alive. The people who were involved are almost all still alive and able to speak, or are the ones who want to speak about it anyway. Did you know much about this incident beforehand, before it kind of got talked about?
Yeah, I knew a little bit, but it was mostly because when James announced the film and he said about the case, you know, a number of us just scattered like mice to go research it and figure out what happened. And yeah, it's a really interesting case. I can see why this has kind of sat under James's skin for, well, almost probably a decade or so now. I think he said somewhere it was since the mid-90s he's wanted to make this. So yeah, that's a long time, and I can see why it sat there. You know, in this, you can really see James digging and investigating to figure this out.
So we see some famous names kick it off, like Stanton Friedman, John Mack, and others, including AJ Javard, who is coming on the podcast in November as well. Thanks to Ronnie Vernay for getting that one sorted out for us. So if you want to send over any questions for AJ, he will be very well placed to discuss this and other Brazilian cases. And I think it could be really good timing if we're hearing that imminently there may be more developments to come on this case particularly. So get those questions over for a Brazilian UFO investigator and researcher, a true expert.
And just to say, like, the rumblings are that they're supposedly maybe going to be a New York Times story, that depending on who you listen to, it's either in the can or they're not going to push it until they get a little bit more on the witness front and stuff like that. But rumors are rumors, so take it with a pinch of salt. Until you see it on the front page of the New York Times, it hasn't happened.
We'll finish off with some chatter on that, because you're right, there's a lot of rumours and it's very hard to substantiate those at the moment as well. And some people may be putting two and two together and getting 12, but they might be getting four. Don't know. there's a nice recap to kick off the documentary about other famous Brazilian UFO cases, showing you things have happened there from 1957 through to Virginia and beyond. South America.
That was a nice moment. There were a number of cases there that, like, were you familiar with all those cases?
Yeah, Colares and stuff like that. I remember Ronnie Vernay, I think, mentioned pretty much all of those when we spoke a while back on the podcast as well. Talk about the large craft going through the village, things like that. It was really familiar from that point on, not necessarily too familiar other than Colares before that. So yeah.
I think about the same, you know, the night of the UFOs, there's that official government page and things like that. Brazil is certainly a lot more amenable to conversation in some ways, I guess. This film proves that they're not in others.
Yeah, and to be fair, I've got down Brazil and South America, but Brazil particularly is a real hotspot for UFO activity. And we've mentioned before that maybe just the South American way in terms of their religion and what they believe and the different types of religion, that they are more open to this kind of phenomenon or any type of phenomenon, whether it be spiritual, paranormal, or what you want to call it. I think especially with some of those cases and what comes out, you notice those older photos again. And again, when you go back to even the 50s and you see some of those disc-shaped objects, not that it was impossible, but it's kind of harder to fake those photos and make them look genuine. And if it's a case of, you know, tech now, we're sort of ruined in 2022, that it's very easy to say, ah, oh, it's a drone. Yeah, it's top secret military tech. No governments, I would hasten to say, had any flying saucer type technology back in the 50s. And the only way to kind of have that conversation is to get proper knuckle deep in conspiracy territory and go around Nazis having flying saucers and stuff like that, which if they did, the war outcome would have been very different, I'm sure, as well. So
yeah, this is the era where Nick Cook talks about it, doesn't he? Hunt to Zero Point. We're basically during that era, the 50s, a lot of different labs were looking at things like anti-gravity, and then come 1960, they've all gone completely quiet on it. So even if we were going the conspiracy route and saying, oh yeah, they have anti-gravity, that's the decade where they developed it. You know, they're not flying around these really svelte drones and flying saucers while they're developing this, you know?
Yeah, it's one of those where I think the old photos are fascinating, and I'd love to see, if we do get to it, and I keep saying we'll get to it at the end, a video from the mid-90s of potentially the being that we're going to talk about as well. So that could be really interesting. We get to see an interview with Carlos de Souza, who was the only witness to the craft crashing at the time, and he describes a washing machine like struggle of the craft to keep altitude and drop and then turn round and go back, and eventually it comes down in a clearing. I liked how James Fox approached to speaking to the residents of Virginia now with the signs in the street, just before we go back to Carlos, by the way, you know, when he was standing with literally, if you know what happened in Virginia 1996 with the UFO, come speak to us.
Sure.
And they literally stood in street corners hoping passers-by would come. So that was a nice take. The snippets seemed very positive and happy to talk, but that can very much be at the mercy of editing or selective clips, so we'll take that at face value. But the city has very much, you mentioned, Dan, embraced the case and the UFO stuff with the museum. There's other monuments shaped like flying saucers. And is there an argument, just for those who lean on the more sceptical side of things, that it's similar to how Loch Ness really embraces the monster because it's really good for tourism?
Yeah, there's certainly an element of that, isn't there? You know, that's the story that the town will be known for. When people kind of go, they would go to see all of these different places and learn about the crash. Imagine if Phoenix Lights did this, though. You know, Fife Simonton, instead of kind of that cheesy approach, if there was a museum and there was, you know, it's kind of like the little seal of approval, that kind of preponderance of evidence, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, I guess people would say. Like, something definitely happened. What that was, that's what's being investigated, you know?
Yeah, speaking of smoke and fire, back to Carlos de Souza, who only gave his original interview at the time to a news channel, and this was his only second interview on the Virginia case and what he saw with James Fox some 26 years later. What did you think of Carlos talking about it? I thought he was very emotional, you know, trying to find that place. It's not as easy. 26 years pass and trees have moved, and he was trying to find a house, and yeah, there's a house there, but it wasn't that one. And eventually he finds the patch, doesn't he? And you see it kind of clicks with him, and he gets very emotional about what went on and what he saw.
It's that human emotion that for me really hooks me into the story. You know, how much the experience affected the person, and kind of over the years, you know, we have a number of witnesses throughout this film that talk about the stigma affecting their lives, you know, friends and family kind of teasing them about things. And it's that I kind of felt was pouring out, you know, when somebody went and they were listening to Carlos tell his story and they weren't judging him for it. And they were just saying, show us what happened, show us where it was. You know, they weren't kind of rolling their eyes and going, ah, you don't know where it is, do you, yada, yada. You know, James was patient. The crew was patient. They found the spot. They got some amazing testimony. And yeah, that emotional reaction is really, really palpable.
We see a clip of the mayor of Virginia talking about the event. And he very honestly says, you know, I never saw the event myself when it happened. But for him, the strength of the testimony of, you know, his citizens and those around have convinced him it's real and it happened. He knows family members, was it his son's girlfriend at the time, or his nephew's girlfriend, was a witness to the lights. And so that's enough for him, and he's heard enough about it that, yeah, this happened because enough people, and why would they make it up? Why would they lie? But I think it's fair to say that for some throughout this documentary, where testimony maybe isn't enough, they'll see a lack of evidence for this happening. And it weighs heavy on the strength of the testimony, the emotion of the testimony, the kind of honesty and the face value of what these people are talking about. And that's what makes it really interesting, that if we are going to get follow-up evidence, that could be huge. And it would be the 35-second video coming out would make this documentary the additional piece to that 35-second video.
It would, yeah, you're right.
which is very strange, because it would be, oh my God, look at that. We have to go now watch this, as opposed to a documentary building up to the release of something. Carlos, he uses a branch to describe what he saw. I like that, you know, just a log, and he's literally going, it was coming across the sky and it was like this, and then and it turned and it crashes down. And I think at this point I noticed where other documentaries that we have maybe been less kind about, because I think we're going to be pretty positive on this one, use really poor CGI, and I get those budget constraints and stuff, but I think sometimes less is more. So leaving out really awkward CGI recreations is better. Even you kind of see that stuff in Ancient Aliens, or maybe not Skinwalker Ranch, but those types of History Channel shows, or even kind of lesser made documentaries on UFOs, and it just makes it look cheap. And I think it was really powerful to use him using the log, but also then the short anime style animation that was very quick to show you the military officials and what it looked like. And
the animations didn't do it for me.
Did you not like those?
They felt like sketches of something that was to be made. And we have someone in the Discord who made a 3D animation of the creature encounter, and it looks amazing. It's a really good way of kind of showing that encounter. But yeah, I missed the. In the phenomenon, James had some really great CGI recreations that weren't overly done. They weren't cheesy, you know, they were mostly silent. And I think I would have preferred something like that. But it's a small nitpick, you know, it's
budget, though. James always said this wasn't going to be as big
100%.
As the phenomenon in terms of, you know, what even maybe potential the output from it and the audience maybe for it as well, as to what a Phenomenon 2 might have, which is, could be right or wrong, and that's the eye of the beholder. But no, I was quite happy with that. And even that wasn't interspliced throughout the whole thing. There was very, very little in terms of,
yeah,
here's what it might have looked like. It's just down to the strength of the talking about it, which I quite liked. I was quite happy with that. Carlos talks about the object and the grass being burned around the object almost by like a chemical substance, and you don't normally associate UFOs, alien spacecraft, which is essentially what we're talking about here, with chemicals, do you? Or hearing that usually it's just like nuts and bolts, memory metal, but nothing leaking out of it and burning an area.
In there are some cases where we've had like the exhaust causing burn marks on people or the ground, or, you know, the weight causing compression of the ground. But yeah, never that kind of chemical reaction there. And that's something that carries throughout this with the beings as well. You know, there are chemicals present that interact with our environment and don't do so in a nice way.
Did that make you lean towards it being more terrestrial of an explanation?
Not necessarily, just because the way I think of stuff like that is that a life form, for that to be normal for them, they would have had to develop in a very, very different environment to us. And sure, you know, that could be a cave or something like that. But I would posit that, yeah, that life form has developed in a very different environment. And that's why those chemicals were so persistent throughout this case and on their bodies and things like that.
Yeah, a very emotional Carlos. He finds that spot. It's taken him, you know, 26 years to go back. He talks about what he saw, very powerful emotion for him, very powerful memory. He said, you know, beings died here. And I'm going to come back to the beings talk, because a listener got in touch today with me about stuff that she wasn't necessarily happy with around it. And I actually had a point on this already, maybe not as emotively as she made to me, but I'm going to bring it up, and I'm going to bring it up with James as well, because I think it's very fair. But we hear about the familiar aluminium memory type metal we know from Roswell. You know, it was like a kind of
very similar
bow type shape. It crumpled in, went back out, which is, yep, cool. It ticks the box. At this point, I think I realised, you know, oh, it's really beautifully shot. I like the use of the drones for cameras. If whether it's James or the crew he's got, they use them very well, especially that Brazilian scenery. It's stunning. And I think, if nothing else, the documentary was always going to look polished and nice, and they've accomplished that throughout. Dan, you're more of the TV documentary type guy than me, given your background.
Nerd.
Like, what did you think?
I mean, you're not wrong. Like, I thought it was really well shot. It was really well produced. You know, technically, it's a really well put together documentary, and I don't think people can fault it on that front at all. I just wanted to touch on, because I feel like we're going to move past Carlos in a second, how he described it as a washing machine. I thought that was really interesting, that kind of washing machine motion, because and I'll touch on Nick Cook again, the idea is that they needed to come up with a technology that would spin gyros, like it build a gyro basically and spin it at a high speed. And that through doing that, they found that the mass of the object was reduced. So it was getting lighter essentially. And there's been some research over the years that suggests that, you know, through spinning gyros in certain directions at certain speeds, you can reduce the weight of certain things. You know, Tom DeLonge talked about it essentially with the terahertz and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you imagine like a malfunctioning gyro, like a ball bearing, you would get a kind of washing machine movement. And that was a really curious detail I just wanted to bring up, because, yeah, that makes sense according to all like these puzzle pieces that we've been given in certain areas.
Yeah, and we get to some more witnesses. There are three sisters, Valkyria, Liliana, and Katia. They were young teenagers at the time, now obviously grown women, 26 years has passed, who say they saw one of the creatures the night after the crash. James and his team take them back to the exact patch where they saw the creature, who they say was cowering against a wall. If you're on any form of social media now, you've probably saw the artist impressions, and some people have recreated those in different ways, shapes and forms, which are really cool as well. And they say it was as scared of them as they were of it. Thinking to the Brazilian UFO footage from the movie Signs we've talked about a few times,
yeah.
And people bring that up, big, confident looking Abe's Odyssey type creature walks out in front of a birthday camera. Whereas this was like cowering, it was scared, and the artist's impressions from it seemed to capture that. The witnesses, the three girls or women now, are all very, very serious when they talk about it. There's no laughing, there's no smiles. It's not lighthearted for them. It was pretty serious, almost uncomfortable. They talk about the sad expression, and this is something I've seen a lot of folks comment about online, about the empathy they felt for the creature's predicament. So
same.
On that, talking about what the listener got in touch with me about, and something I've got in here, it made me think about Ryan Sprigg, you know, shout out, hi Ryan, wrote a book on the human element that's often overlooked in UFO cases, and how when something like this happens, people forget, you know, a Kevin Day, I think is probably the big example from Ryan's book, how it affected him and his emotional well-being and mental state over the years, and the ridicule and how he was treated, and people were saying that's often just forgotten about. But what we tend to then overlook is the non-human entity side of things. and you've got to obviously assume that that is what happened and that's what this being was, that this thing was terrified from somewhere, or at least an environment it's not familiar with and shouldn't be. And the listener who got in touch made the point they felt that was sort of lacking in James's approach here. And I wonder what you think about that, that there seems to be a lack of sympathy for this kind of alien creature that was in a very literal alien place. And there's a lack of kind of empathy or sympathy towards that sort of predicament.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I picked up on that as well. The note that I made was basically that they keep calling it a creature, and instead of a being or an entity, you know, there's more kind of... We like to discern between things that have free will and things that don't. You know, we think of animals as not really having it in the same way as we do. And yeah, being faced with a creature that might have as much an inner life as we do, to call it a creature repeatedly, and you know, it felt... There was lip service paid towards it, and it was mostly the locals calling it a creature. And you know, I think James did mention at one point, you know, that he must have felt really bad. But yeah, it's a really intriguing spot where they could have maybe brought in an anthropologist or something like that to just talk about, you know, what kind of being would be able to feel that kind of feeling. And as well, the kind of the telepathic angle, the very often we hear in these encounters that the beings will put out a kind of, not a warning, but a telepathic message to kind of say, this is how I feel and I'm trying to communicate it to you. And there probably could have been a little conversation around that when it came to the being. But I felt pretty bad for it. I can only imagine if we sent a ship to another planet to look at a civilization and our people got stuck there, how they would feel being in a completely alien environment, being hunted essentially. But it was really curious to me that there's kind of a gap of missing time, right? Where that the crash happened and then the being was found. And there's about, I think there was about 5 days to a week there where it would have just been around. And that for me would be a gap that I would like filled.
Yeah, definitely. And it was a really good point. So I wouldn't mention her name because she's not said whether I should or shouldn't use it. So I'll leave that one out for now. But thanks for mentioning
that. We'll
put
a picture up on screen.
Yeah, full picture.
Address, everything.
Yeah. This, you mentioned the smell before. Is that something that is discussed often in the documentary, a sort of ammonia, sulfur type smell? And that made me straight away just personally think about talking about demonic entities.
Yes.
You know, we've got a lot of Catholic families here. They mention the, you know, Catholicism and that religion. And we discuss these beings being, you know, labelled as such throughout time, whether it was angels, demons, all that kind of stuff. And it made me think, yeah, sure, especially if one of these beings was around back in 2000 years ago, and you hear about ammonia, sulfur, that type of smell being associated with hell, the devil, and you see
red
something that looks,
well,
yeah, something looks devilish, doesn't it? Like, kind of, I suppose you would say it looks kind of evil almost, just because, yep, of interpretations over the years. Yeah, it fits those kind of biblical stories.
I forget, is it Childhood End? It's an Arthur C. Clarke book where literally an alien species comes to Earth and they try and interact with us and influence us without showing themselves to us because they look like Satan, and people just aren't ready for that imagery because of how they hold it, you know? And they're good guys. They ultimately, you know, help us out and bring us medical technology to help us and so on and so forth. But yeah, they try not to show themselves because people are terrified of them because they look like these big red devils. And that's what this reminded me of.
Yeah, I'm going to move on to talk about Marco Scherezi, who was the police officer. Have you got anything before that?
No, we can jump
I think
to
that it. Was kind of the next part anyway, wasn't it, in the documentary?
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk through a documentary word for word. People should really go and watch it. But Marco Scherezi was the police officer who apparently captured the being with his bare hands after it ran out in front of his car.
There's
a very short kind of, yeah, courtroom sketch. You mentioned again that the smell was there. There was a greasy, sticky sensation to the being. He basically grapples it, throws it in the car, and, you know, takes it away, captures this being. Marco Scherezi died eventually, didn't he, of an infection he developed, which apparently developed and grew more and more in the weeks after having captured this being. So there's the association that the contact, the skin to skin or whatever it may have been, was enough to cause that probably indirect, might have been a direct response, like a defense mechanism. It could have been, you know, just the fact that this, we hear about, don't we, coming into contact with these objects or craft, you know, just by their very nature are harmful to us as human beings, and
yeah,
could have been completely innocent but just a byproduct of that contact.
Yeah,
what do
absolutely.
You kind of think in terms of that?
The mention in the film, I think they described it as his immune system just shut down. And again, not the first case we've heard that with UFO stuff. And even kind of referencing COVID, you know, living through that, we know that people are more susceptible with their immune systems or they're not. So it sounds logical as a thing that would happen, that if, you know, you touched a foreign substance that wasn't, you know, kind of in a War of the Worlds-y type way, you'd never kind of encountered it before, that your immune system just gets overwhelmed and shuts down and it just cannot cope with it. They say that there was an unknown substance that was, you know, on the report. So I would love for someone like Gary Nolan or someone that Gary knows to have a look at this guy's blood. And I'm sure there's a toxicology report that they can look into and get a bit more information out of.
Babbel is one of today's sponsors, and they are the best way for you to begin to learn a new language. Immersing yourself in the language of your choice from day one through a whole range of learning styles, including podcasts, games, and online classes. It's available on desktop or through their app. Babbel's courses are created by didactics experts and focus on real-life situations. So if you're holidaying in France and spot a UFO, you can get locals' attention quickly and efficiently. The lessons are as short as 15 minutes and fit into any schedule and can be downloaded to work on offline while on the go. With the help of everyday dialogue exercises and the speech recognition software, learners can practice their pronunciation, and regular vocabulary repetition ensures that what is learned is memorized over the long term. I can already hear some of you listeners getting in touch to tell me I should really learn English given my dodgy accent. When you buy a 6-month subscription to Babbel, you receive 6 months extra for free by using the code zen.ai/UFOBabbel. That's UFOBABBEL. Pay for 6 months and learn for a whole year. Get info and redeem the code at babbel.com/audio. Folks, today is the day you finally decide to make a life-changing decision and learn that new language.
Absolutely. So we've heard various researchers and authors say that various incidents in the past could be put down to horrendous experiments being, you know, performed on or causing deformities with human beings. I know we've had guests on who've talked about, you know, Roswell was deformed humans and experiments had been done, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Which
that stuff has gone on in the past, like horrendous things that have happened throughout human history. And hearing about chemical burns, strange disease, a strange-looking humanoid being creature, the different smells that we can sort of identify, is there more of an argument there for this case being something that was potentially in a sort of asteroid before, but putting all that together, more human than not, that there could have been an element of this being some sort of experiment, someone getting out? It's as wild and strange as it would be a human, an alien spaceship crashing and a being escaping, but There is a lot there that I'm sure people would look and go, chemicals, strange disease, you know, humanoid type figure, deformed. That's yeah. Really, and that's fair.
And you could add to that the fact that the US supposedly notified them. They could have known that that craft was there because they were tracking it, because they were doing an experiment. It's hard to go either way, especially without that footage and without those photos. That's part of the reason I hope that they come out, so that we can kind of go, okay, this is definitely alien, or okay, this is more prosaic and it's more what Kit Green talks about with, you know, malformed children and just really unique disabilities that just make them look very much like something other, you know, to people that only get a glimpse.
I think at this point it made me think, kind of, because I've wrote the note down, I'm going to read it, that I'd love to see this as some sort of Netflix type series, a series of documentaries where James could go and investigate with a budget of a Netflix behind him in a 70 to 80 to 90 minute format, famous events, and pull the witnesses out, get maybe that more expensive CGI if required, and really concentrate and focus on nailing down these types of events, the witness testimony. I think you open up to that Netflix audience, which is massive. Because yeah. Let's be fair, that audience of millions of Netflix users, even the ones who watch the UFO stuff, aren't necessarily going away and paying for this separately or hunting it out even separately. They go to Netflix. And I just thought there'd be real benefit, because I think James's style
would work really well in that type of Netflix format, which has become very popular, and especially the true crime kind of genre, which has really taken off.
That's literally what I was thinking of. Like Unsolved Mysteries, you know, that show has had a few UFO episodes that have done really well, and people talk about them really often. They put together compelling little snippets of cases, and I think James would really excel in that kind of format. Like Marvel's kind of special presentations, instead of saying it has to be a short TV show or a long movie, something in between that kind of, not quite feature length, but it just stays around as long as it needs to. And then especially with this case, because it's still developing, you know, later in the season, you could come back and add more evidence to it as it develops. I think that'd be a really cool series.
Yeah, I could see a big audience for that, especially in the mainstream, for folks who don't necessarily have that kind of UFO affiliation. And it's an easy one for someone to say, oh, I watched a documentary last night. Oh, yeah, but about an incident in Brazil, and there was a kind of crash, and there was aliens running about. And, oh, where is it? Oh, it's on Netflix. I'll go and find it, as opposed to, oh, yeah, I rented it on a streaming platform. I can send you the link for it. Nah, you're okay. Because that's where that conversation probably goes for most people.
And you and I are happy paying, you know, £20 to watch this. But unless you're really into the UFO subject, you're not going to do that.
Yeah, 100%. And again, it's very easy. And this is something that people will send in question-wise. And always happens with James and others. But why don't you get it on Netflix? I'm sure James Fox would have loved Netflix to have paid him to pick this up and distribute it. It's just not as easy as that.
And with places like Netflix as well, they can say you've got to do XYZ, you need to cut it down to this time, you've got to take that out, you've got to add this in, you've got to, you know, and we probably would have had a bit more of the superfluous nonsense that we don't like having in our UFO documentaries. So it's good that it's formed, and if James wants to put it on streaming platforms now, he can, you know, they can pay him for it. But I certainly know, you know, Stephen Greer has a bunch of documentaries on Netflix, and I would prefer this on there, quite frankly.
Yeah, exactly. And it's finding that happy medium and that balance. For me, I made a lot less notes on the latter part of the documentary, and that's in no way, shape or form a slight, but just sort of watching, and it was building a case for the transportation of the beings, what's kind of happened afterwards. It's very testimony based, and again, more witness statements and testimony.
What blew my mind was, I forget the guy's name. I think they called him Military X in the film. The guy who supposedly drove the being around. And that apparently they've been building that relationship for 10 to 15 years, trying to get him to give his testimony on camera. So it's a bit of a minor miracle that we even got to see the back of his head. You know, I'm sure there are people who know that guy that were like, oh, that's Steven or whatever. They knew him instantly, you know.
Yeah, Stephen, the guy that drove the military, the UFO guy, about the alien guy, yeah. And it is difficult, and I'm going to get to that as part of this general discussion to kind of finish off before we go into thoughts and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of rumours just now about a video that may come out, about 35 seconds long. You know, sources say, and it is just rumours at this moment. I got text about a week ago by someone from Brazil telling me that there was a video doing the rounds and that it might come out before it started going heavier online. But I don't like to do the whole, oh, I've heard and rumours nonsense, because you just look stupid otherwise. So I was, oh, well, that'll be great if it did. And very quickly, I think the day after, 2 days after, people started talking about it more and more. If there are videos floating about of any kind of medical procedure, or rumour being it's a doctor that performed the autopsy on the being, rumour to be about 35 seconds long, that is massive. I will just say, and you've seen this as well, Dan, there is a picture floating around online of like a being with a net over it. That's from like a documentary or a TV show. That was very quickly. If you see a picture or video, folks, that you think, wow, that looks incredible, just jump in the thread. And normally, very quickly, you'll see someone has put, no, actually, it's from this, or it's from this TV show, it was a prop from this, and you can very quickly clear that up. So,
and always do a reverse image search on stuff as well, like TinyEye, Google reverse image search. You know, you can just give it the image and say, when was the first time this appeared online? And very often, just go back to the earliest one, and you'll see exactly where it came from.
Yeah, so the picture's not correct, and I would say look out for people like James Fox presenting pictures and videos of anything to do with this first, because it's likely that's going to be at least a clarification from him, especially with James putting up $200,000
Someone said that that was a small amount. They during James did a Reddit Ask Me Anything, and during that someone said, why have you only offered 200k? That's a small amount for, and in a way I get what they're saying, because you know, if this is what we think it is, then it's worth millions. But at the same time, no one knows how much money James has on hand. He, you know, like this guy was looking up like what James's net worth was on Google and comparing it and kind of saying, well, he's worth 7 million according to Google. And I just thought that's not fair. You know, we have so many people out there trying to get this and doing their best that I think it's fair that we cut people some slack.
Yeah. Two things. I'm sure James's wife would argue $200,000 is a lot of money for a start. And I would secondly argue that it'll really again still depend on the strength of the footage, because you're going to be thinking about something that was VHS 1996 camcorder style, and even if it's a good camcorder, there's still going to be some degradation of the quality of the footage. But even if it is clear, it's still how do you prove that is 100% genuine still? So still going to be people unhappy with it. So this isn't a government coming out and saying here is genuine footage. This is still someone handing over him a videotape that's 26 years old and saying, yeah, this is the real footage. It'll be analysed. It'll be confirmed. Yes, it's true, but it still only will add, I think it'll have a lot of weight, but it's still not going to be, I don't think it's going to lead the 9 o'clock news like we've said before, Dan, on the BBC. Like, you know,
I
UFO,
think so too.
Real genuine UFO footage. It'll be still the end of a piece, or it'll be some online stuff. It'll be interesting. I think the best we could hope for it in terms of a follow up are like the New York Times potentially doing an article on it as well, if that's going to be through Leslie Kane, Ralph Blumenthal, Helene Cooper, or others. But yeah, $200,000, I think, is a lot of money anyway for a 35-second piece of footage.
I think the Paris Hilton got less for, you know, the leaked tapes that she kind of put out.
Never seen or heard of those. No idea what you're talking about. Speaking of we see Carlos de Souza describing a sort of Men in Black incident towards the end as well, and this can again bringing it round to this modern day and some of the conversations people are having now, like a Men in Black type incident. People come to him, there's an intimidation. Oh, are you Carlos de Souza? Yep, your daughter is. Yep, and you're. Yep, and you work here. Yep, and they basically lay out his life. And then, you know, you recently saw something, just to say you saw nothing. And, you know, who are you? And it doesn't matter who we are, you know, you saw nothing. And there is that intimidation tactic laying out in front of you that, yeah, we know your family. We know who you are. You don't need to talk about this. You shouldn't talk about this. You need to make this go away. Or yourself need to go away. And it just, again, brought up the idea, and Gary Nolan and others have mentioned this on the podcast and other interviews they've done recently. It's not as easy as people who want to be whistleblowers or break NDAs or come forward and discuss things in Congress, even if they are granted immunity, because there's still a whole lot of bullshit, I'm sure, goes on in the background and intimidation. And we want someone to come out and say, yeah, I worked on a crash retrieval program. Chris Mellon, literally days ago, in an interview with a German show, talked about how someone apparently was meant to come and meet him to discuss a crash retrieval program they were working on, and unfortunately died of a heart attack. You can go any way you want with that. You know, it was deliberate, it was brought on. Maybe they did just die of a heart attack, but it was enough for Chris Mellon to bring that up. And people have families, people have lives, people have careers, and I'm sure there are people in the military now or in government working their way up who could come forward and provide information, but as much as they would maybe like to, they do value their career and their position, and they are happy carrying on with that and keeping what they've got to themselves until such time the conversation opens up in a different way. And I think that's got to be seen as fair.
Yeah, I mean, anyone that goes through, you know, being a member of the military or a politician, they know the game that they're stepping into, right? Like there's national security risks, there's considerations for their families, and they've got to kind of, they're dedicated to doing what's right for the United States of America or the world, mm-hmm. like if we're talking a bigger program. So if there are reasons for the secrecy that we're not aware of, that they are, it's completely understandable that they, you know, clutch those pearls and kind of keep it close to their chest. Once a few people start coming out, I think more people will start talking. But getting those initial people to start talking is really tough, because like you said, it's great that Congress are passing this legislation, but any reach of any group who's been looking at this for 70 odd years and maybe, like in the case you just described, cause a heart attack, we've got to kind of assume that their reach is further, that they have more resources, that they're doing all of what they're doing under the radar and therefore don't need to stick to, you know, the rules and the red tape that, that maybe politicians do. And that's a little bit scary to think about. You could feel completely secure being a complete safe house and still there's a knock at the door and there's someone in a suit saying, "Hi, Carlos, you know, this is your address, these are your kids, this is your wife, blah, blah, blah." And yeah, well, I mean, what would you do? You'd certainly wish that you never said anything, right?
100%, yeah. And I get that's why he was asked, James Fox, on the AMA, and I think it was a bit of an obvious answer anyway, but why do you think the person, I believe it's a gentleman, who hasn't come forward with the video, hasn't done so in 26 years, and he said, "I don't know, probably fear." And yeah, that's 100% understandable. And on a similar vein, because this is something James Fox has talked about in the past, you're aware of the video from the guy Chuck out in Nevada?
Chuck Clark, yeah.
Yeah, who's got the, apparently, we've mentioned this before on the podcast, but a video which apparently shows two guys, young guys, I believe, who were out driving, who essentially filmed an alien craft right above their car. And for those who have seen it, we'll say it's the most amazing footage you could imagine. You know, they're in the car, scrambling about, VHS. This thing was literally over the top of their car. They get out and they film it. James Fox said that this has been shown by Chuck to people recently.
Yeah.
So he still has it and other people are seeing it. And I wonder, is that going to be something that potentially comes out in briefings? And because people like Chris Mellon will be well aware that video exists.
Yeah.
And I would imagine would say to people in Congress who really do have an interest in this topic, you know, right now there are a couple of videos out there, Chuck Clark's of the alleged UFO right above the car. And I mean, close enough that I believe you can see inscriptions and you know, detail on the UFO.
Yeah, structured craft it was described as, yeah. Like, clearly, right?
And Chris Mellon again would be saying to people on the Hill and such, you know, there's another video of a being with an autopsy in Brazil that's only 26 years old that, again, we could get a hold of. So I'm sure if all of this stuff is happening in the background, there will be pressure from different fronts to get a hold of that type of footage, because all of that is huge, absolutely massive. I think they would still both stop short of being smoking gun footage, because there's still that question of, is it real? Is it genuine? What is it actually showing? But I think people like us really, really, really want to see those videos and that footage as well.
Yeah. And it's the kind of thing that I would love to, you know, the reports do in a few days, the UAP report. It would be amazing if just for a paragraph, they were like, "Oh yeah, we've got the Chuck Clark footage, we've looked at it. Oh yeah, we've got the Virginia footage, we've looked at it." You know, when they're just going through these things systematically and actually looking at all the available evidence. I feel like the Chuck Clark stuff will come out one day. That it's kind of teetering, isn't it? But that's a similar deal. It's maybe a fifth or sixth generation copy on VHS, and even in the freeze frames, which I'll get and I'll pop up on the video, and you know, we can link them in the show notes. You can see like the snow over the screen kind of blocking some of the craft, and it's literally just degradation of the material, and there's nothing you can really do about it, right?
Yeah, it's, and I imagine even if and when it does come out in full, people like myself are going to watch and go, "Oh, it's great," but and be frustrated at something, either where it cuts off or the lack of detail in one little bit. And yeah, but I think that's just the beauty and the frustration of this subject all round. But bringing it back to finish off, Dan, I wanted to know any overall thoughts or anything else around the moment of contact piece you want to bring up and just kind of finishing off.
Just, you know, I think James told a really concise story, introduced the world to this really compelling new case. For me, I wish there was a little more news footage from the time. Maybe okay. that claim at the beginning where the US notified Brazil that something was incoming, just a little more proof around there, because that was a part of the story that I was like, okay, that would have been cool if there's paperwork or, you know, more than testimony to kind of pin
that
down.
It wasn't just me, but that came up and then wasn't really addressed.
Yeah. So I assume they saw something that convinced them really, you know, beyond a shadow of a doubt of that, but it would have been nice to see that too. Peter Coyote, I mean, what can you say? He does wonderful voiceovers, and he's outstanding as well. Says a lot of things that, you know, he says allegedly, maybe, possibly a lot. So this is very much, like I say, different to the phenomena in that it's not about the developments that have happened over the past few years. It's investigating a case. The whole thing proves to me that something took place, that there seems to be US involvement, but I would just like a little bit more evidence around that. And I think your example earlier of if this was a TV show, I think it would have been maybe a bit of a better format for an ongoing investigation.
Yeah, I'll add, I'm going to get to a worry I had, and I told you this at the time before it even came out, and when we first got the copy, and how I feel about that now. But my overall thoughts, really enjoyed it. I think it's a great piece. I think we've been very fortunate this year to have the Aerial Phenomenon documentary and this come out, which I think you can see this one definitely had a bigger budget, and there was, maybe it was more polished. It was dealing with something that was a little, not necessarily more recent, was it? But they managed to get a lot more footage from now, as opposed to a lot of historical type footage, which actually, to be fair, you said you would like to see a little bit more of that, wouldn't you? So I really enjoyed it. I think people are going to enjoy it. And to tie in my worry, I said to you a few months ago that people have huge expectations after The Phenomenon, and they're going to expect this to be The Phenomenon too. And it's not going to be. And even though James had said as much, that it was a smaller scale, it was a, you know, it was taking a magnifying glass over a real particular case, an event, and that's not everyone's cup of tea. I don't think this is a documentary in the top three or four even you're going to show to people who want an introduction to the UFO phenomenon, like the phenomenon is now the kind of staple, as we would say, for people like us to show. However, I think it's one of those that once people get into it, and they maybe go, once they get past Roswell, you could definitely go, I would watch this if I was you, because this is really interesting. And listen to the witnesses, listen to the people. I think once people have got past that, okay, something's definitely happening here in terms of, you know, there being a UFO phenomenon, that they'll enjoy this. And I think there's a lot to get out of it. And I think that the beauty being, we keep hearing that literally as we record this and in the days following, there should be more comes out. And it seems to be a lot of people are picking that up. And whether that's a little bit of the hype train, I don't know. But we're hearing about, like you say, potential New York Times article, potential 35-second video of a being autopsied, and who knows what else. Maybe briefings are happening behind closed doors, we're hearing as well on the Hill and other places about it too. And I would imagine, and I would hope as well, that is it one of the investigators or researchers, Pacaccini is his surname?
Oh, yeah.
AJ Javard, Ronnie Vernet, and other UFO researchers in Brazil get their credit on this too, and can pick up and come out and speak about it. And that's why I'm really keen to have AJ on the show, because they have done the work on this for decades as well. So they deserve their credit and, you know, time to step into the spotlight too, and talk about the UFO subject to an audience that maybe is focused primarily on US-based events in the past. So I think it's good timing, and I hope to get more of them coming forward too, which is great. But my worry was that people were going to be disappointed by default, that it wasn't The Phenomenon, that it was too specific, there wasn't enough footage or smoking gun footage, and it was more of the same in terms of the Aerial Phenomenon doc, where there was nothing new but just a very well presented case of something that happened. And I'm pleasantly surprised that the reaction online's been overwhelmingly positive. Just the cleanliness of my Twitter timeline these days, I don't know, but I've only really seen positive reviews and people really, really enjoying it.
Even looking on Rotten Tomatoes, I could only find one review that was damning, and the points the guy was making are a lot of what we're talking about here. He was just being a lot more negative about them, you know. Like you say, it's not The Phenomenon too. It was never going to be. This is kind of, you know, that was for us, this one's for James, and it would be really cool kind of seeing as he goes forward, if he kind of keeps that up, you know, if he does a general overview and then he dives into a case and kind of builds this body of evidence. It's really good to kind of show people that there are cases that you can go and investigate like this, that, you know, don't have a bow on them and the conclusions haven't been made and there is work to do, similar to the stuff we did in Colombia. You know, the stuff is everywhere, not just South America. So we've all got these production devices in our pockets now. You know, you can go film with the latest iPhone and just kind of start putting together some really good documentaries on this stuff. And it's perfect timing as well, because, you know, the US is taking it seriously, the world is kind of watching. So if you have a local case that you think is compelling, like, go make a documentary about it. You know, it doesn't have to be an hour and a half long, it could be 40 minutes, but just start telling the world about the case.
Yep, be a TikTok documentary. There's a audience there for that these days. I hate TikTok, you know that. Just some reviews people left on Twitter when I asked about how they felt immediately the kind of day of release and day after. Terry said, just finished and loved it. Brennan, excited to watch it. Toby, just said, I've just seen it on the big screen. There is so much compelling and emotive testimony that builds a strong picture of what I'm now sure was a bizarre UFO crash, military recovery, a search by another UFO, and capture of live beings in Brazil with US involvement. Everyone should watch. To which David replied, no, thank you.
Did David elaborate?
Nope, that was it. Toby then politely replied,
at least
okay,
he was polite.
okay then. So yeah, there you go. Trevor had it queued up and ready to buy. Jean-Francois Charlebois had just bought it on iTunes. He said he was going to watch it now, and he followed up with, not as strong as the phenomenon. The best moment for him was when Carlos de Souza was running to the crash site repeating, it's here, a true emotion in the moment they captured. And that's what we talked about that. And the movie ends leaving so many questions, an unfinished story, which I think are very fair points. And pretty much along with what we've said.
You almost could have had like a big title card at the end with to be continued, right?
Yes. ...
Yeah.
The old school. Dr. David Holzmer, loved that as well. One of the most emotional UFO docs I've seen so far. Lots of heart. Scott Fisher, just watched it from iTunes in Australia. Oh my God, what an amazing documentary, and guaranteed to stoke the disclosure fires even more. John Roberts put, getting to the point, I don't even think the objects being seen know what they are. So yeah. Or we even know what they are. So a lot of interesting points there from folks, all very fair. The reviews have been really positive. I think if you've seen it, people at James Fox One want you to go and pick up a copy and leave feedback. But like, get on Rotten Tomatoes, get on iTunes and leave a rating and review and let them know what you think, because that all helps with algorithms. And we always talk about it in terms of YouTube and Twitter and things like that as well for the podcast. But yeah, leave your creators and stuff reviews, because it really does help, and a lot of bits of feedback like that.
Yeah, too. Yeah. It's essentially their job, right? Like, it's just giving feedback that they're doing their job well, and it helps propagate it kind of out there. And like you said earlier, people will go and search for like UFO documentaries. So if you leave a good review, this will pop up near the top. I wanted to ask you just kind of, I feel like we're wrapping now. What did you think about the section with Eric Lopez, you know, where he was threatening to shoot them and get off his property?
I had shared that clip months ago. That was the one by mistake. Remember, James sent me it.
That's
and I was
right.
Asking for something to share on the podcast.
So it's on the YouTube, right? Like, yeah, that clip is somewhere on YouTube.
I didn't realize I wasn't meant to share that. And it was a misunderstanding between myself and James. I'm not a guy who goes for clickbait and, you know, sensationalism. So, I don't know how much of that is dramatic license. You know, it was kind of dramatic. No one likes having, you know, threats of being shot at them. But I get the emotion behind it. Is there something that you're expecting me to say on that? Did you have?
No, I was just curious. It's just one of those points that I feel like a lot of people will kind of be like, they didn't talk about that. And it's kind of the big moment of the film, isn't it? Where they finally find this guy who's supposedly been in hiding, and he threatens to shoot them. And they ask him if he's ever going to come out with his testimony. And he doesn't really answer. He just kind of threatens to, shoot them or get out my property. It would be really nice if we could decisively see whether he had something to say or whether he's just been annoyed by being hounded by people.
Yeah.
Maybe that's something we can ask AJ.
Yeah, that's fair. And you wonder, do people like AJ maybe have conversations because they're based more locally and things like that, and off the record, you know, and privately. So yeah, good shout. I think I would have had more. Do you know what it is? I think given what's happened in recent days or the last week since the release and the rumours of what's potentially to come, it's made it feel like this was part one.
Sure.
And it's like, okay, rather than it being a complete piece, like some of the listeners said, that and you mentioned there, that to be continued, it's like, okay, we're waiting on the next part now. And that wouldn't have been the case a few weeks ago.
Yeah, that's true. It's very much like since this has come out, and and you've already alluded to it, is that just the marketing machine, or is there more to come? Or and I guess we'll see, but as it stands, you know, comparing it to something like A Tear in the Sky, which again was very much, you know, they didn't present all of their results in there. That was kind of like, more is coming. I feel like this fared a lot better in terms of the presentation of the case. And it was a lot more honest in terms of, you know, James saying, I don't know if something happened, but something sure seems to have gone on, and we're investigating it, you know.
And to be fair on that, I would love to say that I would have liked to seen James Fox direct and present A Tear in the Sky with those guys and girls. Yeah, that's not necessarily the UEPX crew's fault, as we said at the time, for anyone who hasn't heard the A Tear in the Sky review. But yeah, out of 10 flying saucers for you, Dan?
I would give this, I would say, seven and a half to eight. Yeah, yeah.
You went slightly more. Yeah, I think seven, a high seven, is very fair and a very strong, highly recommended, that you go and seek this one out. I don't think you are in any way, shape, or form wasting your cash.
Yeah, for sure.
If you do buy it, you know, our guarantee is Dan will refund you if you have not fully enjoyed the
in stickers and art and hugs.
Even then, yeah, hugs. Yeah, hugs is preferred currency. If you want to purchase it, the links are in the description, but it is genie.us/moment of contact, or for those who like the US accent, I can do genie.us/moment of contact.
When are you and Ross Coulthard going to have a Tom DeLonge impression off?
Maybe one day. Yeah. I've actually this is a bad thing to finish on because it's not related in the slightest, but I said to you, plodding through the Secret Machines audiobook.
Sure.
And the narrator, do you know his name off by heart?
I don't know.
I love some of his attempts at different voices. yeah, some of them borderline un-PC, but it's... Yeah, it was really surprising, and I was like, "Oh God, I wasn't expecting that when I heard it."
I don't think I've heard the audiobook. I'll have to go back and listen to it.
Yeah, I'll send That's you the rough timestamp. Yeah, cool. Okay. But yeah, go and check that one out, folks, as well. But yes, thank you very much, Dan. Thanks for joining me.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me. And just before we go, so do you decisively think that there were the creatures, ET creatures in Brazil?
I think there were non-human creatures. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Thanks, folks. That is all for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Please remember to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. You can like, retweet, and subscribe. That would all be very much appreciated. The shows are being uploaded onto YouTube as we speak more and more. You can sign up at patreon.com/thatufopodcast to access shows ad-free as well. Please get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, That UFO Podcast. Of course, on Twitter, it's @UFOUAPAM. And again, folks, as always, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little rat. Meditative game of state full on meta. Can't imagine how it could have been any better. I got to the top of the stairs and there he was. Like, you awake? I was about to abduct you, cuz. I jumped back and nearly kissed myself. Then I climbed out the window after the elf. And I woke up in my bed and there was something on my head. And everything was weird and everything was red. And I called up my boys. They thought this was noise. They thought it was a dream. They thought it was my toys. They thought it was my problems. And they think I should take care of me. And I don't know what to do because it doesn't really scare me. If you really want to know who I think they'd be, then it's you and me, and us and we, and him and her, and that and she, and that thing over there, and what's that, Jake? If we're being serious, open your mind, consider your heart, consider time, consider your space, consider your lies, consider your life, consider your eyes.
That UFO Podcast is powered by Zencastr. Zencastr is one of the world's leading platforms for recording and hosting podcasts. The open beta strives to put the power of studio quality remote video production into the hands of anyone with a story to tell. Features include HD video recording, studio quality sound, chat and footnotes. All running right from your browser so you can record from anywhere without ever installing anything. Check out the links in the show description to find out more.